Calling the order, we will start with the salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please, Emily.
Mayor Selmer.
Here.
Burnham.
Here.
Hanson.
Here.
Henry.
Here.
Schaefer.
Here.
Corsmo and Reichert are absent. Four members are present. A quorum is established.
Okay. And the proof of notice is on the back of the agenda. We only have one item listed, but I would like to add a new business item B, which before each of your spots this evening, you should have an administrative leave agreement for the manager. And I will discuss that when we get to that item. So with that addition, is there any other items to be placed on the agenda, or is this okay the way it is now?
It's good like it is.
Any objections? Okay. This is done, anyway.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Well, here are citizens present. Anyone in the audience care to testify before we start a meeting? Dave, did you have anything you wanted to bring up? John? Okay. Paul? Trish? Okay, we're at the new business item, White Pass Yukon Route Rail, Freight Rail Restart Proposal. And attached this evening, I guess the first order of business is to explain why we're here. As you're aware, some of us went to White Horse, and I will get John Walsh on the phone momentarily. Some of us went to White Horse a few weeks ago and listened to a presentation from Bull Kells, not Kells, Chuck Eaton and Eugene Retze, and it was about the move of magnetite from White Horse to Skagway. And it seemed through the presentation that we heard that there was a very real opportunity that this could be brought from Carcross to Skagway by rail. We since have been in discussions with Paul Taylor and John Walsh and Ted Leonard of ADA to try and put together some sort of way that the municipality could participate in activities associated with this rail line. And I didn't want, I believe it was current, but not then, Assemblymember Hanson, myself, Paul Taylor, the manager, John Walsh, and John Tron, who else was here? You here for the meeting with Ted Leonard? Okay. I'm sorry, Chris, I didn't. And that was it?
I was not at the meeting with Ted Leonard.
Okay. Anyway, because we had done that meeting and started talking about investment in rail cars, et cetera, I didn't want the manager and myself and John Walsh to be getting ahead of the assembly. So that's why we're here tonight. And I'll get John on the phone. Actually, before we do that, there is a letter of understanding between the municipality and Paul Taylor, PCC. The manager has the authority in code to issue contracts $5,000 or less. Is there any objection to that? Paul is going to be a consultant with us on the potential for the rail cars and the actual involvement with the rail, what would we call it, Paul, the port rail presence as a part of this transfer or part of this move of magnetite from Carcross to Skagway.
Actually, the title I chose was MOS enabled restart of the White Pass Yukon Route.
Okay, so it works for me. So is there any objection to this?
No objection.
Gary?
No objection.
No.
Yeah.
In the
Yeah, no objection, I guess.
Okay.
I didn't read it.
Well, like I said, the manager has the authority, but I don't want to do anything that doesn't have another layer of transparency to it, so I brought it forward for you guys.
Okay.
Okay, we'll get John Walsh on the phone here.
Hello?
John?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. I can hear that other, like, it's like you were ratcheting things up a little bit.
I moved my phone closer.
Okay, there you go. Anyway, we have a quorum of four assembly members, the mayor, the manager, the clerk, and six members in the public. And I've just finished getting the assembly's non-objection to utilizing Paul's service in this effort, but I have not really done anything other than talk about the meeting in Whitehorse and the teleconference, but none of the meat and potatoes. So I was waiting for you to get on here to kind of lead us forward now.
Okay. You, Mr. Mayor, and members of the assembly, and welcome to the new members, and greetings to the public. I'm Walsh, I'm from Juneau, in the municipal lobbyist. It's tangential to lobbying, but I'll go as far as I can, and then I think it becomes sort of an investment consideration or a business proposition or an encouragement, more of a lobbying effort by the municipality to seek an interested investor. Indeed, do. So the premise is that it's a proposal unsolicited by White Hat and Eagle Minerals, Eagle Industrial. Real quick, Eagle is a quarter-shift magnetite, already mined ore that needs to be separated, lift the magnetite out, and ship that through the Port of Skagway to a market in China, presumably. 1.8 or 1.9 million metric tons over the course of at least 5 years, perhaps six, approximately 375,000 ton a year, which is estimated to be using trucks, is estimated to be 30 double trucks daily, 24/7, basically. So doing nothing, assuming Eagle Industrial gets its water permit at the Whitehorse Yukon end, and assuming Eagle Industrial secures lease space at the ore dock in Skagway, and assuming their trucks and business plan is in order, they would hope to ship beginning May 2013 and go probably through November, and then restart in 2014 and annually from then on in April through a 9-month shipping window. So doing nothing on our part and assuming things it's for the company or would be shipping through the Port of Skagway. Chuck Eaton is the owner of Eagle Industrial, an experienced mine reclaimer, and perhaps I don't know. I think he might be a geologist with other mining prospects. I would venture to say he knows what he's doing, so that's a good sign. He's a gentleman. We've met with him one or two times in the course of the last 2 years, once or twice at Roundup, and then most recently at the luncheon that was advertised by the Yukon Chamber. As the mayor probably reported, myself, Paul Taylor, Gary Hansen, and John Tronrod attended that luncheon as members of the audience. Who Timothy gave was a suggestion that this might be, using Eagle Industrial, this might be an opportunity to see that the very materials that will otherwise come through Skagway, unless someone objects, have those come all the way to Carcross, get onto a flat car, and then go the remainder to the Port of Skagway on rail. The railroad represented by Eugene Renzi was in attendance. His name was on the billing, and we took it public was led to believe that this is a proposition that both parties, the railroad and the shipper, are interested in pursuing, but they made clear they did not expect to raise the capital themselves. They were encouraging to the audience, this is an opportunity that perhaps others, including governmental entities, should be interested. Probation in the report before you talks of the car cross to Whitehorse. While that is attractive and it obviously pencils even better, I just don't see any likelihood that can, and that's just out of the realm of possibilities in the next near term. So I would discount spending any too much time on that scenario, even though the long-term 20-year, 30-year horizon that very much suggests, the study suggests why that should be considered, but I don't think it's a real consideration for the magnetite Eagle Industry proposition. So that leaves us with the prospect of advancing a rail flat car operation from to Skagway to Carcross in working with Eagle Industrial to ship that magnetite. The decision point the closest decision point from my takeaway is Chuck Eaton getting a water permit in, let's say, December, January 1. Then he has every right, and we should expect that he would begin to procure necessary equipment to ship magnetite. If there is no rail proposal being advanced, I would expect he's going to call a trucking company, a manufacturer, and procure sidecar dumps. And that would, once he procures that capital, I don't know how he would be convinced to change in midstream and shift over. So I think that's the window that we're talking about. That's why it's on the agenda. And my recommendation to the mayor is to, if nobody does anything, then as I said, Chuck will presumably get a water permit and procure side dumps. If somebody were to do something, that could be a different outcome. The question is, who's going to do that? Ada could, if they were asked, who would ask them? And that's where the municipality of Skagway comes in, because we would see ore either way. Presumably, you're going to get it across your dock, but you could see it come by rail, and I think we all conclude that will yield more employment in Skagway, and that's something that we've all been working on since the initiation of Gateway 3 years ago. So that decision is, do we advance this a little further and chew on the bone ourselves and then bring back to the assembly a recommendation for consideration, do nothing, to do something, what would be the recommendation, something in between perhaps. That's probably it in a nutshell. And I'll stop and take any questions, or we can go further.
Any questions at this moment for John? Don't hear any at the table here, John, but I as you're aware, because you secured it for us, I was over at Paul's office this morning, and we discovered through a voicemail message that Paul had received from Kels Boland that we had extremely dated information that was sent out to all of us maybe a month ago, when we started trying to put...
In July, we got a document in July, and no one updated us with a new document.
And so, because we knew, as Paul's call, that there was an updated document, John got us a new document from Chuck Eaton today, and that's what you should have before you. One of the other things that we heard on the phone call from Kells, at least Paul, and I'm going to lean on you a little bit here, but that there might be some other mechanism in place that may be being considered for rail cars, some sort of operating leases or something that would essentially make what we're doing here unnecessary, I guess. But we did not hear that in the presentation at the Chamber of Commerce that I can. I mean, I remember hearing operating leases, but I don't remember hearing it associated with these cars. Dan?
I'm struggling a little bit here trying to connect these. You might understand that Chuck Eaton was speaking with the intent of White Pass and the city of Skagway, White Pass and or Ada via support from the city of Skagway. But these other people, other than Eagle, financing this to come about?
That's right, Dan. That's my takeaway is that if you start with him being the shipper, he was suggesting, and I think Ford as well, he's amenable to ship either way. He does not want to incur the capital costs necessary to buy the black cars, for instance. I wasn't clear if he would be interested in obtaining the containers, so that's a question. It does appear that he would procure the side dumps. So left to himself, he'll get side dumps. If you want to do the rail, he's interested in working with Barney. He doesn't want to do the capital. But that would mean that he would then pay, as he just like he'd be paying for his driver. So the investor there's nothing that led me to believe that he did not expect the investor a reasonable rate of return.
John, we were looking at, I'm sorry, Dan, go ahead.
And how so, John?
We would, let's say Company A, whomever that is, that said, okay, I'll take you up in your offer. It will, whomever the syndicate or investment group is, but it would have already secured an operating agreement from both the railroad and Eaton. It's not out of the realm of possibility that both of those could be investors, but perhaps they ought not to be. But any investor would need a secure agreement that the cars would be on the rail and the ore would go on the car. So, I mean, why would you do this if you don't have those agreements? Once you have those agreements, then you would strike a price, because you'd have to go to the bank or the investor would have to pencil this, and then they would, you know, you would have to, before you procure, you'd have to have some binding commitment that somebody's going to use these, and if they don't use them, pay for them. And that's the one beauty of having Ada in the mix, is because, as you know, when they built the Red Dog ore terminal and the port site and the road, they're not the miner. So the mining company had to bind themselves to pay down those costs, even if they didn't ship ore.
Right.
That would be that somebody, it's an equivalent of a collateral agreement. And so, so doing such a deal, a prospect or dancing it with Ada would secure that that leverage, if you will, that would neutralize some of the risk.
Okay, John, if I can, two important points here to me. I don't, if you could bring me up to speed, what sort of investment are we talking in total?
We haven't got there yet.
As Dan said, Dan, we have a new document today, so that there's some finer details that I'm sure fall to closer, but I think in the order of, and it was reported at the luncheon, on the order of $6 to $9 million. And there's a general range there that I can't break it out entirely, but I would say that it has to include the flat cars, the forklifts, some track issues down at the dock. And if they're not included, then we would move out as a separate village. But mostly capital capital equipment. I don't know about the boxes, the half-high containers, but
okay.
We should presume they should be in there unless somebody tells us they are not.
Okay, whatever it is, let's say $10 million.
Yeah,
right.
So it, unless I misunderstood previously, the tone from Gene Retze at White Pass was he, in the scope of this entire project, however big or small it is, whether it's car cross to White Horse, whatever it may be, whether it's completely rail, partly truck, whatever it was, his initial blush to this was that he was looking for the money first. He was looking for whether it was government involvement, whether it was private sector, whether it was the city, or what have you. So would I understand it right that Chuck Eaton and White Pass are looking for this $10 million to come seven from ADA, three from MOS, five and five, or something like that, and not be involved in that part of it?
I think that's accurate. It could be that in order, let's just say, I think that's accurate. I think, in other words, they're willing to allow it to happen, make it happen, commit to it happening, but they're not fair and appear unwilling to go secure the capital necessary for it to happen.
Okay, and so if ADA secures $5 million of the 10, the city bonds $5 million, we have to, of course, if that was, you know, how it shook out, we would have to immediately be looking at how we would retire that new debt. And am I to understand you that Eagle would be willing to share in his profit margin if we did this?
Well, let's just say this, Dan. There's no way you would do it unless you're and see a return on investment. Now the question is between return on investment and still, is there even a little bit of profit that you could make in addition? But it has to be a proposition that pencils for the community. There's no question. In the added jobs are separate. They could be calculated on your part for a lesser return on investment, but there's no way I would recommend to you. Oh, well, it wouldn't be me, but I would be surprised if you would do this at a loss.
Right. So I would have to then apply the math that whatever savings that Eagle's going to enjoy by using the rail component would more than likely be the pass-through profit margin he would give to us to retire the bond and hopefully make a little bit of profit.
Exactly.
Well, of course. So we know that there's a number out there that would be plugged into that part of the equation. We just need to know what that is, of course. That would be helpful. And then the second part would be that the time frame that's listed here, unless I read this incorrectly, it says 9 months, roughly March through November. So in our discussion so far, and as you know, what was forwarded towards ADA, actually via the first reading of the ordinance, spoke specifically to that issue, being that we would prefer the majority of truck traffic to be in the, for lack of a better description, off time of the cruise ship season. So is Eagle sensitive? I don't need your help. Is Eagle sensitive to that, or are they not?
If you're asking me, Dan, their window is March to November. Their operation is water dependent, and so I don't think they operate that the colder temperatures are adverse to their washing operation to separate magnetite.
Okay. All right. And you said it was 30 trucks that they were trying to target in a 24-hour period, right?
That's right. 1,500 tons a day, 60-ton dual trucks.
Okay.
Is that the number, Paul?
I'm sorry. 50-ton dual trucks. 25 ton each pump and 30 trucks a day.
Okay.
And Dan, incidentally, that's he's targeting 375,000 tons for 5 years. Earlier we heard it was 6 years, but it appears. appears that they're specifically, more recently, they're saying 5 years, 375,000 tons.
Okay.
Would be the payback window, if you ask me. And in fact, if you look at his calculations on his truck retirement, because he has to pencil out the cost of trucking, he would retire his truck in 5 years with a zero depreciation value. So if he can drive them away, that's extra. But he's going to break it down on paper to where his equipment is paid off in 5 years.
Yeah, you're right. If he can drive them away, it's extra. Also, if he can retire the debt before he needs to drive them away, it'd be good from his perspective, of course.
You know that is, with your background, he's in the commodity business, so the magnetized price is his. Anything about where he penciled it is benefits to the risk taker.
Sure. Okay.
And on that note, just to hold that thought, he may want you to be what you might have suggested. We might want to reference that price, require what it takes to pencil it at this market price, but benefit if the market, in other words, maybe there's a participation in there.
Yeah, that would be that. No, I wouldn't be opposed to that.
And John and Paul, there's no unwinding this clock. If we're not ready to deal and meet the startup, he's got to order trucks, or he's got to order the thing that fits on the rail, or he's got to order the thing that fits on the highway. He's not going to be in a position to do both.
That's exactly right. And I think when we met with them, John Tronrod, Gary were there. I think he's got a dial-up number for the side dumps. He just has a place to call.
Right.
And in fact, he said a 6-month lead time is what he anticipated. So, and of course, those are only available off the rack, more so than maybe black cars, but maybe not. But anyway, he's prepared. I have no doubt that he's prepared to execute.
Right. That's one of the things that alarmed me a while back was that we initially had one of the people involved in this talking about meter gauge cars, and I was just hoping that wasn't what the order was. Anyway, Paul, if you would take a stab at what the updated information gave us today versus what we heard in Whitehorse. Not versus what we heard in Whitehorse, but what we've been looking at since March is now a August.
Sure. Actually, I want to stop. I'm going to back up a little bit and set some fundamentals that will come around to pick up the conversation you were having with
Sure.
This one's huge. Yeah.
Just fundamentals, we'll go through it down, and then we'll never come to it again, but we have to know this to know what kind of equipment we're depreciating to get to what the cost of this model might be. So look at just the very top of the page on the Kuiper column. We're going to be hauling 375,000 tons a year, which is roughly equivalent to a fairly big year when the railway was hauling ores. We're going from March to November, 250 days. We have costed out 15 of the articulated cars, the diagram which is shown in your packet. Each one of those cars will hold 4 containers. 4 times 15 is 60, so that takes care of our 60 containers a day. I need to give you some idea what the train length will be. It's going to be about 30 miles long. And these 4 trains will weigh about, they'll weigh more than 6 times of, say, a 15 car passenger train that you see here every day.
And I'm going to seem just a little bit disjointed now because of the
Yeah.
When you say 15 cars, Paul, they're going to come to town, be dumped, go back, be reloaded, so you're just going to keep 15?
No, actually, what you have is that. This is probably seems like I'm doing this backwards, but I have to do it this way. I'll have the floor. The planner that shows tracks to New York terminal, the sum of the track will be about half a mile long with maybe one switch. I mean, it's not large, but that's what we can do. Is that the plan? Probably not. We could go to the outside where the tracks used to be. We might come on the inside if we bury the pipelines. But I want to give you some idea of what the tracks will look like, because I think we're going to talk about what the cost is. In these two reports, Hills goes on and on and on with the total four scenarios. The best one for us is sort of scenario two. I'm going to suggest that we move to a new scenario called MOS 1. These are the features of the MOS scenario. And here we're trying to foresee and eliminate issues that might come up from the public, the railroad, and other users. MOS 1 would be a night operation old, where we have full utilization of the White Passive locomotive fleet. We would require two sets of the cars, so we have to have 60 cars plus spares. Or trains would not move during the day, so the rail passenger operation is not impacted at all. There will be no terminal switching down here during the day, where we would be in the way of passenger trains or blocking crossings for pedestrians and the usual vehicle traffic to and from the docks. If the MOS train would leave Skagway about 7:30 in the evening and head right to Park Cross, arriving about midnight. I have a little procedure to do a car cross. The engine and crew would be there only about an hour, and you would come to Skagway probably leave about 1 in the morning. You would arrive in Skagway about 6 o'clock in the morning. So that's the operation. It's that time of operation. Turning back to the sheet. We are always going to be comparing our cost to the cost to truck. That's the standard. In the March report, the truck costs are shown at $21.12, and I think that's very accurate. In the most recent report, the one we received this morning, the truck costs are up a little bit to $22.47. So that's going to be the standard. We will always come back with that. Truck costs, $22. Here's the makeup of the operating costs. And these are right from the March report. The March reports are the neat line. And then on the right-hand side, I have contrasted those numbers to the report that we see this morning. So as you can see, the rail costs have moved up. So something happened between March and August. Crew costs are up. Fuel costs went down slightly. Locomotive maintenance is up. Power maintenance is doubled. And you see maintenance away is $250,000. And then we added operating contingency. And we had an overhead profit.
Why did the train crew cost go up so sharply?
I don't know.
Oh, that's not a good answer.
Double the cost on the car, a brand new car, seems odd, too.
Yeah, this will be a new fleet. And that of all the numbers that you see there, I think that the car costs are probably the closest to real money. So you see that the rail cost, or about $4.41 a ton in March, they've now moved to $5.46 a ton in the August report. So that's one component. We have the truck component from Utah to Park Cross. Then we add $5.50 for the rail costs.
And then we start picking up the transload pops at Park Cross, which is up slightly. And this is the one you want to be interested in. This is the rail discharge at Skagway. Because the sum of the operating costs, the sum of Park Cross handling costs, and the sum of Skagway costs are the operating costs that are really easy to find. If you go to the March report, which ones do you guys have?
We have August now.
The August? Yeah. Okay. Well, have any of you seen the March report?
Yeah, we had that.
Yeah, that's what I've been studying until today. Eight times.
Essentially, what Kells has done, he's taken the cost of the flat rate, which is around $4 million. He's added in the cost of the containers. He's added in the cost of the container dumper. And he's added in the cost of handling machinery to have a first cost. Somebody's going to pay that. And then utilizing the spread between the rail cost and the truck cost, he's presented this as an investment opportunity. So just say that you borrow $8 million for the cars, the containers, the container dumper, and the equipment for the terminal. You are going to have to pay that back with the difference in the trip cost and the rail cost. And it's vigorous slip. In March, the cost was about $3 that somebody, Skagway, you could impose a fee on the ore trains. You could say, okay, we want $3.50 every time it comes through here to pay back for the cars, the dumper, and the container. That has shrunk a little bit. That is, the amount of the $3.50 that you have to play with this has compressed a little bit now with this August report. So what Kells now has done, as near as I can tell, is... And you have to know what these guys are thinking. In March, in order to come up with this cost, he had costs of other railroads. Go spend $4 million on cars. You're going to collect $3 a ton times 375,000 tons a year as your annual payment on a car. And at the end of 5 years, he said, okay, residual value of those cars is 50%. And that is a credit to you. And so on paper, it worked. But now...
If I may, for the sake of round numbers, he was talking about $1.8 million, I believe, over the length of the 5 years. Is that right, John?
Tons. Yeah, that's right.
$1.87 million. And at $3... if we even rounded up the $1.870 million to $2 million, at $3, that's $6 million. And if you take the other 50 cents, it's $7 million total. And Paul, you were saying $8 million in cost of cars and so forth. Is that right?
No, the cars are $4 million.
Around $4 million. Okay, and so you would anticipate that our level of participation, you would want to be somewhere in that $4 to $5 million range, right?
Yeah.
So now, what we're saying is we want to have the city of Skagway bond $5 million, probably at about 3% right now, for 5 years, to retire it with the $3 per, and about break even at the end of those 5 years. And why would we want to do that?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think it's a real good question. If we were retiring it at the end of 5 years and we had $10 million in the bank, I would say that's a good reason why.
Okay, and Dan, I exactly understand what you're saying. And so, first of all, just to be sure, the reason that it's on the table is, do we explore it any further, period, or end it right now? That's one.
Sure.
Secondly, and no decision on doing the deal, just should we dig into it further? Secondly, the benefit, you could list benefits. Obviously, the first requirement would be it has to pencil in the black, even marginally, but it can't be in the red, or else then you're into subsidizing, and you'd have to ask that question. And sometimes there might be a reason for you to subsidize, but heavy subsidy is just simply draining the treasury, and the benefits go to the shipper if the price of magnet egg goes up, and why we just do that. But the other consideration why we should at least be interested is the potential for jobs.
Okay, now hold. So let's hold it right there, because this is always the spin part of the discussion. If in fact that's what's motivating us, that's great. If it is significant, I'm going to bring up a couple points. Just in this scenario, in and of itself, I don't see it being significant, number one. Number two, I look at the trail crew cost being $254,000. Now, that's an annual cost that the business plan, of course, has to look at. And knowing what they make at White Pass, plus their benefits that have to be paid and so forth, that's not a lot of jobs. Now, that number's padded up to $392,000 in the August 2012 column to the right for reasons we can't get an answer for. So that would translate into a few more jobs if, in fact, it was $392,000. But in pencil, I can write any number in there. I could have wrote $1,392,000. And said, well, no, it's going to be a lot of jobs because look at the train crew cost is going to be $1,003,000. I need an answer as to why that number is up sharply, number one. And even when I get it, I don't see this as a significant increase. And they're not year-round. This is March to November. Our target, the drum that's always beaten this town for the last 20 years, is year-round employment. So, again, the employment aspect, that's the spin part of the conversation all the time. And quite frankly, I'm a little tired of it. I want to see actual dollars that I can stack up right now as each phase of this goes that benefits this community and that this community can see so that they can build their community on a yearly basis continuing into the future.
Going to object to anything you said. The only thing I will say is none of us have had any input on the spreadsheet, so we have no idea how the cost moves from the previous version.
Nor do I.
So that's as far as we have a copy, that's all. We don't have any background as to the number and the source of the numbers. So, but you brought out a good point. If it is 1,392, then that is the universe of job benefits that appears. So that's a fair point that's what you're looking at least at the railroad. Then you also have action at the port site, and that's on the docks, running forklifts and moving containers around in the ore, separate from moving the ore to the ship. So,
and, of course, I'm well aware of that.
Yeah. Okay. So that's all I have to say. But that's the question from my point of view, bringing this up or working to this point is and I can recap on a Ted Leonard interview or a teleconference too, but the point of bringing it up to this point is how much further do we go without your engagement or your approval to vet this and bring it back? Because clearly, if we don't do anything, then it's down to an outside investor, which it could be, or it will be trucks. And that's just as simple as that. That's what I understood.
Right. John, hang on just a second. Tom, willing to say something?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a quick point of information. My recollection with our conversation with Ted Leonard regarding the financing was that when we asked him on a scenario of, say, a $5 million project, how much would ADA finance? And how much would they expect the other players to come to the table with? And my recollection was he responded on an 80-20 ratio, 20 coming from us. So,
and I think that's what we all heard. But it does seem like the numbers are a little bit, you know, it would have been nice if we'd have had this 2012 August information from Kells Boland, which, I mean, he's in a cabin in southeast British Columbia, not available by any means. So we don't have any way to check with him. I went ahead with the meeting, even knowing that we had this newer information, simply to get it started down the process that we need to have. And one of the last thing I'll say is, in that list of costs, which are train crew, locomotive maintenance, car maintenance, track and structures, all those costs have some labor in them, with the exception of the fuel costs. So, and I do not, I won't even venture a guess. After you leave the train crew costs, which we can truly say is a labor by itself, but I'm not sure what the locomotive maintenance, car maintenance, or track and structure maintenance is, labor versus
Yeah, and
materials.
All of those are things that White Pass already has in place and most certainly are not going to approach this situation as, oh, let's try and hire more track guys and more car maintenance and so forth. They will try and do it within the scope of their operation. So that's I don't see that as an addition first. I just want to see each and every project take on a little different tone, which is Skagway first.
Right.
Then tell me everything else that follows. Period.
And I think the only driver for me was or is that we're saying rail, bring this stuff in. If we really want that to happen, and we don't seem to have, and Tyler, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we don't seem to have a United Railroad approach to being a freight railroad anymore. You know, Eugene is certainly there. But I don't know if some of the staff that would work with Eugene is there. And what that means to me is we can't be ahead of the railroad either, which is what you're saying in essence. John?
I hate to interject, but one other thing to keep in mind when we go through this process is how many lines come online and put enough trucks on that highway that then make that highway undrivable. That's also part of the scenario that we have to understand as well.
Okay. Yep. Paul?
Dan, you were getting to an internal rate return. Read that.
I'm sorry?
You were looking for an internal rate return and how this is going to measure up.
I wanted to measure up to Skagway first and then let the dominoes fall behind it.
It looked to me there was...
That's essentially a P4.
Okay.
The latest for a long report. But I have to copy in this report, and I haven't had time to study it, is that he is also taking residual value on the machines that we're finding out now, which I think is a stretch. In my view, that's a stretch. In an attempt to get this internal rate of return up. In March, the best plan for us probably would have been close to East Holland Scenario 2, internal rate of return of about 8%, payback in 3.3 years. But that has shrunk now with this new report down to 5.2%.
Mm-hmm. And I had 5.4.
So I found both reports incredibly complicated to understand. Because there's no real layout of what the operating costs are, and then a very concise description of what the capital costs are, what the payback period is, what the residual values are. And I think that's probably the next thing we need to do. And my thought was, we'll pick in one spot if you continue with this, and then skip belly.
I'm sorry, finish that again. If we continue with this?
Yeah, we go with our plan, what's one.
Mm-hmm.
And then we should know the cost of progress. And then we should have Skip Elliott run our numbers for us to come with the internal rates of return and also get a little bit on what is reasonable for this residual value that they're pumping in this literature for.
Mm.
Gary?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, thank you. It just it seems to me that somehow between, since we had the initial presentation in Whitehorse at the Chamber luncheon and then the teleconference with Ted Leonard, that all of a sudden it seems like we're kind of riding solo on this thing at the and all, you know, I was under the impression that we were going to invite other government agencies to join us on this, like the Yukon government, the state government, because of the interest they would have in saving maintenance on the highway by taking these 30 trucks off at least the southern part of the Klondike Highway, and safety factors. And also 4 or 5 jobs, maybe 6 jobs in Carcross, so we thought that the Carcross Tagage Nation, First Nation, would also be an interested investor. So when, you know, we're talking $4 or $5 million here for cars and it just, and the Skagway plan. I know time's of the essence, but shouldn't we be talking to those people too?
We should be, and I don't want this meeting to get in the way of that.
Well, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, John.
Which line are you looking for, Stan?
This one I didn't get, the MOS one.
Well, that's
accurate, Gary. And that's why it's on the agenda. Is what do you want? How do you want to go from here? Because just my experience in the audience, I can't represent. I mean, who's going to do what to whom? And so it needs to be a decision point where you dispatch your staff or consultants and say what you want them to do, because otherwise we're not representing the municipality, technically speaking. And of course, no one's making a decision. It's merely recall. This document is not the custody. We have a copy, but there's no investment of time by any of your people. So it's merely informational, but how do you fact check it, vet it, test some of the numbers, talk to ADA, and develop alliances that minimize it, that either call it up short because it doesn't make sense, or scenario the whole thing and then figure out how to de-risk it by getting other partners into the deal?
And that's kind of where we're at.
What this is about in my mind is where do we want to go next and bring it to your attention so that we're not out there doing things without authorization, if you will.
Well, I think that Paul's on the right track with some of his numbers, and they might be numbers that we can work with, but I think we need to know those numbers as soon as possible, and then we can go talk to these other people and say, this is what's going to cost, and this is what you're going to benefit from it. Now, you know, can you get involved? And then if it is, and if we have ADA involved, I feel pretty secure about the fact that this money is going to be secured, because I don't think ADA is going to go into anything unless they know that they've got collateral tied up, so that the city would also be safe in their investment that way too.
Right, and we would also have the opportunity, because we're already in meetings with ADA on an entirely different, not different, related but different subject, in having some sort of presence of theirs in the orchard post 2023.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, Dan's creative. We can maybe create something that
we can connect them.
We can connect the dots.
Yeah. And from your point of view, the biggest number out there, the number that takes out everything else, is the cost of cars. And we don't know that yet.
Mm.
This was the worst possible week to try to get information from car builders. It's all in Chicago. So we have solicitations up to 5, but I have no basis to come and either raise or lower the car costs.
All of the car builders are working in Chicago?
No, there's some sort of a convention there.
Oh, I was going to say maybe that's how that employment number dropped to 7.8. That came out of Chicago.
So we'll have a better handle on that.
Okay.
Tyler, has the railroad done any back-of-the-napkin calculations on utilizing the rail to haul this down from Carcross?
I'm not here making any comments for the railroad. I'm just here as an efficiency.
Okay. Well, what about it, Mark? Do you know anything? I mean, we know that Eugene has said he was going to maintain the track, maintain the bridges, but he wasn't going to put any money into the cars. And I believe that, I mean, that's part of the impetus of why we started down this road to begin with, is if it takes cars to haul the ore and we have a willing shipper, a willing transporter, and a willing ore terminal to receive that, what role can the city play? Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's worth turning it off yet. And I agree that we have a long ways to go before I won't say a long ways in time. We have a distance to go in fact gathering to get it to the point where this assembly can say, okay, let's move. But we have a very short time window. As soon as Mr. Eaton's water license is in place, he's going to be hammering at Ada. And I do not believe, and John, maybe you can help me here, John Walsh, I don't believe that Mr. Eaton has actually done any negotiating with Ada in earnest. Is that correct?
Well, I can't characterize it. He did say in an email, here's the email I got. He said, if I'm trying to track down Jim Hemsath, like, you know where he is or what's going on. And frankly, I have no idea where Jim Hemsath is because I just don't keep track of him. And then secondly, he said something to the effect, I don't have my email up, but is there any action, is there anybody sort of following up? And I took that to mean, is there anything happening on the rail freight? So when it comes to, when I take it, he's reaching out to Hemsath. The door is open between Ada and him, and I don't think he fears them not having space because there's no one else reserving space, so he's probably reasonably safe there. But what Ted Leonard suggested to us, Ted being the executive director of Ada, is that if we want this to at least happen by rail, let's say we're interested in making that happen to the extent, because if we don't, I don't know that anybody else is going to try to make it happen. So if we wanted to, then Ada would certainly want to work with us, those were his words, to make it happen. Which means if then the customer comes and says, I want to reserve space, I've got trucks coming, Ada could say, well, hold on a second, we're working on a plan to receive your magnetite by rail, and we do look forward to you coming. So there's a timing there, but nothing technically stands in the way from Eaton and Ada striking a deal in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, how should we proceed?
Well, I think I'll say this, and then you, Commissioner Ray, at that end, but I think mission accomplished, number one, the assembly now is aware, and we have a second more updated copy of the proposal, so the scenario, if you will. So that's one. So that's important that the assembly be, and I think, Mayor, it could have been a discussion on Thursday night, but we didn't go into the other things after the assembly meeting, so this is the next best opportunity. So that's what that's about. Then it's a technical subject, and obviously a rail subject, it's primarily rail, so I don't have that expertise, so it appears that, Paul and the community have some of that. So that's movement. And then I think the next is the work team needs to task some people to, dig down on this and then come back to the assembly. And I would think that means an outreach to ADA, an outreach to the Yukon Economic Development, if they're paying for this document in the first place. And does that mean there are parties on that side of the border, including First Nations? And if so, could be part of this. And then either shape it up to where it's got fractional ownership or a scenario that we can do and bring it back to assembly and then decide at that point whether you even want to do it or not. But other than that, I'm going to concentrate on other things unless this is directed to outside of my limits right now, spending too much time on it. And so, kind of like, what do you all want to do between now and, say, mid-November or end of November? Because at a certain point, the lead times for procuring equipment are going to become your obstacle.
Right. Mr. Hunt? Given that there is no current agreement with Eagle, what's the scenario that you've heard about the ore coming down here? Where's it going to go if there's no facility? I mean, can they have a facility built by May if there's no... I mean, they don't even have a design of any kind or an agreement. Is there any input you've got there? I'm not talking about inside information, but the likelihood of them being able to have magnetite come down here on a train by May 1st.
Or truck.
Or truck.
Yeah.
I mean, either way.
The upgrade terminal would require a couple of feeders. There's four feeder slots available where belt feeders and electrical stuff are there for them. The concrete slab from the capstone to the end is already available. The question comes in, and I think Chuck was leaning more towards a temporary shelter than the stockpile material, which would be easy to put up in that spot. So
easy and fast, you mean? I mean, like it could be done?
Yeah.
Like a 90-day thing or something?
Yeah. I wonder, and I'm not trying to add fuel to anybody's fire, but I wonder what's the actual material on a slab in a tent with a 50-mile-an-hour wind, where is that stuff going to end up? It's not going to be as cozy and sealed up as Capstone is. And I know Capstone spent money recently to make sure that they hadn't done any contamination in the harbor. What happens if magnetite gets in the harbor? These are open-air questions. I don't know the answer. But it doesn't seem to me that we want to have some sort of hodgepodge way to handle magnetite if there's a permanent way to handle it. But my concern is whether there's time to do it. It doesn't sound like there is. So, but
when we started with the Capstone remodel, we started in October with the extension on the terminal and finished that before Christmas.
Okay.
That was start from scratch to a closed facility.
Oh, that's good. That's good news.
90 days.
Yeah.
Foundation's already there.
Yeah.
The foundation's there. It was a matter of tying into that existing foundation, ordering the steel and getting it galvanized, setting off the galvanizer, and then getting it shipped up here.
Yeah.
What's the biggest lead time? Construction, putting it up was about 3.5 weeks. It was up and close. So it's doable.
Okay. That's what I wanted to hear. All right. Who wants to be on a committee that takes this to the next level? I mean, I don't think we need any motion here at the table. We're not spending any money yet other than the money that we're going to spend with Paul's consulting. But, I mean, that's a short-term, short-lived effort. Dan?
I guess.
Dan will be on the committee. Gary? Dan, Gary, Paul.
Okay.
And I'd like, when are you leaving for the winter?
You're not. I'll be
in and out.
Yeah, okay. Go down and see the grandchildren, to go down to the mother-in-law and the nursing home. And okay. So I'll be back.
It would be nice to have a go, no-go before the end of November. Wouldn't you say, John?
I think that's exactly right.
I think.
And that's all this is to 15. Get us to that stage. It gets trucks off highway. I don't know how the congestion is locally. That's going to be an issue. But it does show. And as you, we're not going to go into it too far on the car across the white horse. That's a long, another generation. But it clearly shows when you look at that column that rail is a huge saving. So this would be the nearest opportunity for all of us working together to prove up the viability of rail. We'd only do it if we went. So I think you're right, mid-November, late end of November maximum.
Yeah, I think November 15th, we can get there.
Paul, find out if it's
You're going to be gone.
Doable or not?
Yeah.
No, that time frame.
I'm sorry.
But
it works for you.
It does.
Okay.
But we got to get away from this. I agree with you. We got to get away from this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we certainly have said very, very publicly, very, very vocally that that we want. Rail, not only to haul magnetite, but we want rail to haul a whole bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, yeah, that's where we want to end up.
Actually, my prediction is once we know the cost of the cars, we'll move all of a sudden from planning to negotiating.
Great.
And what is, I've been hearing, and I don't know if there's anything to this, maybe you can answer this, Mark, but the new rail that's north of Carcross that would possibly be needed south of Carcross? There's a resistance to move that because of the abandonment of rail concept?
I don't know what the latest is on that, Stan.
You know anything about that, Paul?
No, the only sort of consideration we have is in the time, the MOS one, we're assuming that the train will be restricted 2 miles an hour over that 10-mile bed track. That's
for as long as it takes to fix it.
To replace it.
Okay, I'll talk to Eugene. You know Eugene well enough. You can talk to him.
Okay.
Yeah. Give him a call. I called him today, telling him what we were looking at, this updated thing.
Is he in town?
No, he was playing golf on Glen Abbey today.
Poor Glen Abbey.
Lost 3 balls on the 18th hole. So start your conversation out with... Maybe you can give us a little insight, Eugene, what you're going to do north of Carcross with that rail.
Nope. All right.
So is there anything else that we need to discuss on this? We have a committee forum. I'd like to have some idea when the committee might get together the first time. I'm going to be gone the next week.
Tuesday would work for me. Sooner the better. If that works for you, Paul.
Gary, are you going to be here Tuesday?
Yeah. Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
It works, because then I have finance and then we have assembly, so Monday or Tuesday. I'm thinking Tuesday's better than Monday.
Can you guys, if I'm assuming that there's only two assembly members, that you can meet in my office if you want to.
Or we could meet at PCC or whatever. You want to do an afternoon thing?
Yeah, whatever works. Are you going to have some hard numbers by then, or is that pretty quick?
Is that too fast?
No, we'll have something.
It's either Tuesday or Friday.
Get Kells in on the conversation. I mean, he should be able to answer some of those questions, probably.
Yeah, I don't know when he's going to be back.
Oh,
anyway,
what it's gone.
Friday's okay. I'm just trying to avoid Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah. Okay.
Friday, Gary, we'll shoot for 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, I'd like to take a 5-minute break. John, thank you very much. Please understand that we will have the committee obviously keep you in the loop.
Yes, thank you. And then just to my notes, Dan, Gary, Paul, did I write that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And then if you weakened data. Ted is standing by the teleconference that we had initially. So, so I think we, we get our numbers, and that might be the next flight thing as well as the group call. So thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good weekend.
See you, John.